Alrighty, let's rock this thing. 3, 2, 1. Good afternoon. Today is April Fool's Day, Monday, the 1st of April. Made it through the first quarter.
Yes.
Yeah. Joining us this afternoon is Eureka Police Chief Merle Harpum. Yes, we did. You got something you want to talk about there, or are you, is this my opportunity?
It's you're the boss.
Okay, well, we got the
visitor.
Yeah. We got the Cooper Gulch body situation that was going on, you know, with the fire. And then, that body in, yeah, Cooper's Gulch. Yeah, okay. Well, we just got confirmation from the head honcho here that he does remember that one. And we had the situation this past weekend out by the golf course,
yes.
So we'll talk about some of the things to do, not to do, when we come back.
At my bank, I feel at home. I'm Trish Greggie of the Journey's End, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, hometown banking isn't just something they say, it's how they do business. I'm Kevin McClendon of Georgia's Glass, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
At my bank, we invest in the future of our community every single day. I'm Greg Foster, and my bank is Redwood Capital Bank.
Redwood Capital Bank, our interest is you. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 3:13. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Merle Harpum, but before we do, our quote this afternoon. Are you a golfer?
Not anymore.
Okay, at one time you tried?
I duffed around a little bit.
All right. Sam Snead or Jack Nicklaus?
Sam.
All right. Sam for 200, Alex. Okay, fine. So this is from Sam Snead. These greens are so fast, I have to hold my putter over the ball and hit with a shadow. If you golf, it makes sense. Yeah. It's a good joke. If you don't, it's like, is it going to be a long or short winter? Let's talk a little bit about the Cooper's Gulch incident, I guess, from last month. Fire?
Yes.
Body was involved. It was burnt as part of the fire.
Right.
And that's kind of where most of us left off. What's best current knowledge on that situation, Merle?
Well, the guy had drug in some wood pallets to keep him up off the ground, probably. And it caught on fire. And my guess is he was probably intoxicated, fell onto the pallets that were on fire and didn't get off.
So you're not thinking somebody did something funny or goofy?
No, we've had a lot of contact with this person.
And how many people, for those who aren't familiar with that part of the community, 14th, is one of the main drags, fill in an area that's by nature canyon on both sides.
Yes, brush and canyon,
backed up from a public park, from the softball fields, soccer fields, whatever time of the year it is, to 14th, there's a band, what do they call it? Green space.
Yeah.
Green space that's there, and you guys have regular calls. I know the fire guys have got regular calls. Is that a pretty popular camping area for those folks?
I wouldn't classify it as more popular than most other areas in town. It's used, but it's not as used as some of the areas closer to the waterfront, closer to the services.
With all of the material that's there, the plant material, are you surprised there aren't more fires there?
Well, that's a pretty soft area in terms of weather, wet.
Ferns and that kind of stuff?
Yeah. And they have a lot of moisture in them, and so they don't burn as well. As you get down on the waterfront, where you have some of that pampas grass, I've seen that stuff burn in February after, you know, after a one day of a dry wind. They ignite very easily.
Now, you got Cooper Gulch, and I know this is sounding very Eureka-centric, so just give me a little wiggle room on this one, folks. But behind the old school, or I guess in between the two school buildings now of the County Office of Ed, and then they've got the new structure that's by Myrtle and 6th, 7th up there. Right. And there's an extension of the whole Cooper's Gulch, again, right, headed towards the bay. That's also a rather frequented area, but it's maintained. It's knocked down, but you can see, and somebody's got a suspended bed and mattress in one area, and you can see some the visibility through that area, which I thought was always the major deterrent, doesn't seem to be deterring too much.
Well, we don't have a lot in there right now. We've the swap has gone in and cleaned that area pretty good. That's Caltrans property through there. And ever since they've been keeping it brushed back, we don't have as many camps in there as we've had in the past.
But what is there seems to be rather visible.
Yes.
No hesitation for those folks to use those areas? Can't you guys go in and
we
hustle
do.
That stuff out, or can
we
you?
We do, and a lot of the stuff is leftover stuff, too.
Oh, recycled?
It's not anybody really there. No.
Oh, it's just residual stuff.
Yeah. They leave their stuff behind when they leave. You know,
so
tarps and
swap and those guys don't go in and get that stuff out?
Yeah, they do remove that eventually. When they go in and do the brushing, they take it out.
So the next cycle,
time.
so to speak.
Right. Yeah.
Otherwise, is a tree fort for some kids?
Well, I don't think.
I wouldn't want my kids in there. But
we don't see a lot of kids down in there.
Okay.
They might cut through there or something, but they don't linger in there long.
Do you need Caltrans permission to go in there?
Yeah, we have a letter from them.
Oh, just a standing agreement then that you can go and deal with whatever
remove
the situation
people from
is.
Their property, right.
Same with the Office of Ed?
Yes, sir.
So you can get down in there whenever you need to and
take
care of business.
Yes. Most places that have those type of problems, they do. That's one of the first things we ask them when they ask us to. They've got a problem. So the first thing we ask them is, well, you need to write us a letter giving us permission to go in and remove people that are trespassing.
Are there some that aren't willing to?
No, I can't think of any. I mean, there might be some that are slow, but then after they end up with a huge mess, by then they quickly come on board.
Hooray. That's got to be frustrating for you, for the neighbors, for people driving by. I mean, we can see it and we get frustrated, but we don't have to live in there.
Right.
Or live in the neighborhood that's impacted by that. So it's just a letter to the EPD?
Yes.
And that's enough to make it happen?
Yep.
KINS, News and Information Times, 319.
Still cold.
Now a minute of sunshine for Humboldt. For years, the Eel River was the state's second largest source of steelhead and third largest of salmon. A UC Davis study estimates it once produced more than 1 million fish annually. This has been replaced by unpredictability. Last year saw a good salmon run, but some years it is very small. Several causes are cited, but all agree the Eel River ecosystem has been degraded. Now a task force of volunteers has come together to pinpoint the reasons and work to restore the watershed. The Eel River Task Force consists of public agencies, Indian tribes, conservation organizations, and others committed to establishing a scientific baseline of the causes of the decline and what might be done to reverse it. The members agree, no finger-pointing. A plan of solutions must fulfill legal responsibilities to protect endangered species while also respecting private property rights. It will be a big job, but a healthy Eel River is worthwhile for all Humboldt County. Sunshine for Humboldt is a nonprofit civic association dedicated to the betterment of our communities.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Times, 3:24. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Merle Harpum. Merle, the concept of, I don't know, working with homeless. I know that there's a lot of different groups, a lot of organizations. I know you've got a soft heart for some of the situations that you run into. When you have some of these crimes on crime, attacks of homeless on homeless, does that fall into a special kind of category?
No. An assault is an assault, regardless of whether you're homeless or live in a mansion. And we take them all serious.
So how do you work through one of those investigations when there's not like a home invasion or a home break-in? Somebody just stole something from somebody. Is it treated, processed any differently because there's not Street 1, or 3rd Street or 102 3rd right. Street or 25th Street?
Right. Of course, you know, a home invasion can be in a tent as far as that goes. But the evidence is going to be different usually than into a home. If they broke into the home, there's usually evidence of, pry marks or something like that that you can match up with tools. You're not going to have that in a tent. They just, open the door and walk in, basically. So, they're different, but we take them very serious.
So a tent is a residence. I'm thinking, camping. Yeah. You're camping somewhere,
right?
And somebody takes something from the tent. That's a
right.
Okay, I never thought about that. Yeah. In that context.
Yeah.
Is a living space considered a residence? Let's go back to this fellow that was in Cooper's Gulch.
Yeah.
Okay, he had a designated area, perhaps. Right. Mm-hmm. Does that have legal status as a residence?
Well, no, not really as a residence, but certainly any property he has or any injury that's sustained by him is as serious as if it was in a house.
Is it tougher to do the investigation? Or easier?
No. It depends on the situation. Each situation is totally, different. Whether it's a home invasion, each home invasion is totally different. So it's just you have to go in and do what you do, investigate it, gather what evidence is there, get statements from the people involved.
We had one of our weekly meetings this morning. One of the guys was indicating that a neighbor of his, I guess it died over the weekend, and it wasn't no spouse around, and that EPD responded and broke into the residence. I think he said kicked in the door. That sounds a little melodramatic to me, but okay. Yeah. And I said, really, not fire? Because I was thinking, medical aid or potential medical aid. Well,
fire usually calls us. If they get there and the place is locked up, like the Are You Okay program we used to have, which we're going to start again, and the fire finds a place locked up, they call us to do the entry.
So they won't do a forced entry then?
I'm not saying they won't do it, but if there's no, smoke or anything obvious going on, they probably will call us. But, of course, if there's some evidence that something is happening right now, they'll probably do a forced entry.
So in that kind of scenario, how do you guys stage that or prep for it? I mean, if there's nothing that's in immediate, like there's somebody inside with a gun and somebody's been shot.
Well, a lot of times we do these things and we don't know whether there's anybody in the house. The neighbors or a relative or something is concerned because they haven't heard from John in, a couple of days. His car's in the garage, things like that. We'll check the house the best we can to see if we can find a place to get in or to visually look in a window or whatever. And unable to do that, we usually, if it's a relative or something like that, we'll say, it's okay if we break in the door. And they usually say yes. If they're not, we'll probably do it anyhow. If we think the person is in there.
So you will look for permission, so to speak, to break
in? Sure.
First.
Look for permission first or a way in other than having to force a way in.
What are some of the weird things you guys have found when you do that?
Well,
I mean, I would imagine there's probably a pretty good range of what you might find.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, it can be pretty ugly sometimes, especially if they've been in there a long time. Sometimes you don't need to break in to tell because you can sniff around the door and determine something's wrong, you know.
Is that a pretty common situation for you guys and gals to find somebody who's dead inside the house?
Yes, for a long period of time, yeah, it happens. It's not something that happens every day, but I mean, it does happen. I've been on a few of like those myself over the years.
And you just do the normal investigation part and try to figure out what happened?
It's an unattended death, so it has to be handled differently than if a doctor was in attendance or a family member was there.
Somebody who knew the story?
Right. Yeah.
I can appreciate that. Will pets, animals that might be in the home, typically react aggressively protecting, or will they be passive and know something's wrong?
It depends on the dogs again. Some of them, they do their thing. It's nature's, that's their job to protect that home. But you find some dogs that love everybody, I've got a dog like that, the big German Shepherd, 90 pounds, and he'd be licking your hand.
Bring a little candy and we're buddies, yeah. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 3:30.
Decade of Difference presents a brand new competition, Innovate, a business challenge opportunity to pitch your creative idea. First step, upload a 60 to 90 second elevator pitch highlighting your business venture idea by March 29th. 40 finalists will be selected to move on to phase two. But don't wait. First 100 entries receive a free iTunes gift card. To upload your video and get more information, visit decadeofdifference.org. A grand prize of up to $2,500 will be awarded. Don't wait. Innovate.
Good afternoon. KINS News and Information Time, 3:35. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Merle Harpum. Merle, the situation that happened over the weekend with the rape by the golf course, I guess,
right,
is the simplest way to say it. Good Samaritan, I think, probably can come back to bite you an awful lot. And that's why a lot of us, I think, hesitate about doing the ride to the young kid that's the hitchhiker.
Right.
Helping out a stranded motorist. I mean, all those things that we used to be able to feel very comfortable in doing.
Absolutely, yeah.
The way that the news...
Now they use these things as ploys.
Yeah, and that's kind of what happened with this gal, isn't
right.
it?
Yes. And you see, you see a lot of that nowadays in people using ploys like that to get close to you to do something nasty like in this case. I mean, this was a very brutal man. This guy...
Drugs?
Don't know.
Okay.
But I mean, he was very vicious. And this guy is, I would say, just knowing what occurred, that he's probably a serial rapist. He's probably done this before because it was so brutal. I mean, most guys in these situations, they're not brutal like this. Burn you with a cigarette and...
some really aggressive stuff.
Yeah, mean stuff.
If you're in a situation like, one, I don't know why a gal would be walking by herself.
Well, it was daylight.
I mean, if somebody needs help and you look over and you can't see their face.
Right.
Or they're all covered up or. I would think most of us would initially go, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I'm on the phone. I'm calling the cops for you.
Right. Exactly.
And take care of it in that
and
fashion.
I don't know if she had a cell phone or not, but that would have been an ideal thing to do.
Is that what's recommended?
Oh, absolutely.
By you guys?
Sure. Yeah, okay. Keep your distance. And
that is a valid 911?
Oh, yeah. Sure, the guy's asking for help.
In this specific situation, is there anything that you can share to help folks that might have seen or just to keep their eyes peeled for this person?
Well, there was a car that went by that honked the horn. We don't know why, but it frightened the guy and he got up and left immediately. So we don't know if the person that drove by saw something, so he honked his horn, or if he just inadvertently honked it for some other reason. But it probably saved a situation to get uglier.
So what motivates somebody like this? Any idea, or is there just such a wide variety?
There's some vicious people out there, you know. People don't understand sometimes that there are people that would kill you and not bat an eye over it or not feel a bit of remorse over it. You would have more remorse if you went out here and accidentally ran over a cat. You would feel badly about that. I mean, at least I know
It'd be a bad day.
Yeah. But there are people that would kill another human being brutally, viciously, and not bat an eye over it, not have a conscience over it at all. And sometimes it's hard for people to understand that there's people out there like that. Fortunately, a lot of them are in prison, but unfortunately, some of them right now are being released too. So
this would we be able to sense anything different? You know, we're walking down the sidewalk and there's two people coming at us in two different scenarios. Would we be able to tell the difference between one, the regular person who's walking by, or the predator?
Well,
who was looking for an opportunity?
You know, one of the things that, you know, I encourage people to do is to look people in the eye. Don't look down. Don't be that guy that, you know, looking at your feet when you're walking. Look people in the eye, because they don't want to, you know, if they're going to do something, they don't want to be looked at long enough to where they know they could be identified. And that will also tell you what is on their mind, the way they're looking at you. And it may not be, it may be something very innocent, but it might give you that gut feeling. And we need to pay attention to sometimes our first impressions of things are true.
Yeah, I guess that's one of the skill sets they tell people, you know, if you don't want to be prey. Face to face. Hi, how you doing? You know,
yeah.
Stupid old me. Hi, Merle, how you doing? No. Hi, officer, how you doing? You know,
yeah.
I mean, that's, I think, just normal interchange for some of us. But you see that's a prevention behavior in a lot of situations.
So I always equate it to John Wayne. You know, John Wayne never got robbed. He could walk down the street. I mean, he had a swagger about him. He knew where he was going. He walked with confidence. The victim, we usually find the victims are the Casper Milquetoast types, the types that don't look people in the eye and they look away. They don't want, you know. And people and criminals read that. They know that. They're not going to attack some guy that's, you know,
so
that looks like he's confident.
Walk
he knows
proud.
Where, and same with a woman. Yeah. A woman can walk with confidence.
I understand that one.
Yeah.
KINS. Yeah, I'm done. Heading to break quick. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:42. We'll be back with more from Merle Harper.
Sacred Heart Church invites you to join us every Sunday for our liturgical celebrations. Saturday, 4 p.m. Confessions. 5 p.m. Sunday's Vigil Mass. 7 p.m. Spanish Mass. And on Sundays, 9:30 Morning Mass and 12:30 Spanish Mass. Come and celebrate with us.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time, 3:45. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Merle Harpum. Merle, some of the different challenges that are out there got to be very frustrating for you, but then every once in a while something happens. Last time we got together, you were talking about the the magic camera that reads all the license plates.
Oh, yes. Hey,
and then it comes to fruition two or three days later.
Yeah, well, we've had a lot of success with it in finding stolen cars, both with people in them and just parked. And then we had the incident where we placed a car at a house that had burglarized in Arcata and tied in with they've had the same system we do. And so it really made the case strong because it put the car at the house at the time the place was burglarized. But the most recent one was just last week where we had the guys from Fresno, gangbangers up here, that had been involved in some shootings down there. One woman in a barbershop that they went in and sprayed with bullets severed her spine. She's now paralyzed.
This was in Fresno.
Yes, right. And so they had several places they thought they might be going, and one of them could have been Eureka. So they notified us. So we checked some videos of some of the stores and found guys fitting the description using a market out there by the park on 12th Street. And so what we did was we sent our license plate reader, our vehicle with the license plate reader, to drive that area. And they drove the entire area because they figured the people were on foot, and so they had to be fairly close. So they drove that entire area and came back and started running the license numbers. Well, they started with the most recent ones first, and there was over 300 license plates that the car had read. Well, about the 30th car we ran came back to register to someone in Fresno. So we contacted Fresno PD, and they says gave them the name of the owner of the car, and they said, that's a relative. They've got the car. So that's the house that these guys are probably at. So that's how we found them at that particular house.
Why Eureka?
Because they knew someone here. They had relatives here, in fact.
So it was away from...
Yeah. In fact, the relatives were straight shooters. I mean, they were squared away. They had been from that area, but one did not want to raise their kids in that environment, so they moved to Eureka.
And then the environment followed them.
Yeah, the environment followed
them. So when you find out a situation like that, what do you do?
Well, we mobilized a SWAT team. We went in and evacuated the area, the neighborhood, and then got the phone number of the house and called them and invited them to join our party outside. And they did. They wisely came out with their hands in the air, with their shirts off, so we could see that they had no guns. And
really, no altercation, no.
No, no. And I mean, you know, and that's usually the way it turns out. It's usually, you know, we're not going to be taken alive, that type of thing. But when it comes down to it and they look out and see rifles with scopes aimed at the house, you know, they decide, no, it's not my time. I don't want to go through that anymore.
And none of them had little smiley faces at the end of the scope, did they?
No, no. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting that you saw where San Francisco is doing away with the toll booths. You know how they're doing away with them?
Same
they're
thing.
Using license plate readers.
That's what I figured. It I was know. A quick scan yeah. similar to what we had here.
Yeah. They'll read the license plate and send them a bill.
Except they have 8 or 9 of them, and you only have one, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, we have two.
Oh, you have two of them?
Yeah, we have two.
Very cool.
We're thinking about getting a fixed one.
Adhere to one specific unit?
Yeah.
Okay. Not one to spot.
A fixed location. No, no, no.
Oh, really?
A fixed location.
Like 7th and H. Boom, there it is.
No, yeah. Right.
So to speak.
No, it'd be like maybe coming into town or maybe like at the mall.
Okay, some of the higher traffic areas.
Right.
That'd be kind of a kick, too.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming by.
Okay. Is it up already?
It's over. Time to go find out if the Giants won.
Yeah. Okay.
Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hug someone you love. See you tomorrow.
Okay.